Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Today, I have a special guest, my neighbor and friend, and I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about herself before we start the show.
Well, it's Theodora Brennan, and I am an herbalist. I went through the School of Natural Healing, Dr. Christopher's School of Herbology, and I've been working with herbs specifically since going through the school for over 20 years now, and I've gardened for my entire adult life.
So welcome to the show today. I'm so excited to introduce my guest, Theodora Brennan, who I've known for almost, since 2000, so over 15 years now, and she has an amazing garden. She has a business called Theodora's Garden, where she makes the most amazing salves and different, tell me what you do.
Okay, I suppose herbal products. I grow many of the herbs that I make my products, from which I make my products, and I make salves and creams and balms and soaps and lotions and just about anything that one might use totally topically. I wildcraft herbs from this area, and I suppose that's not really gardening, but I go out and I gather the things that grow better outside of my gardens than inside of my gardens to use in my products. And I love gardening. I wish I had more time to do it. There always seems to be something that needs to be done here. But my gardens are my one of my passions.
Perfect. Okay, so we're going to dig into that in more depth in a little bit. So, but first, I always like to ask our guests, tell us a little bit about your first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? What'd you grow? Who were you with? How big was it? Just a little bit about your first garden.
My mother loved to garden. I remember being in my mother's garden as a, not as a child. Perhaps as a child. And definitely an adolescent, and mother always loved to have her hands in the soil. She didn't do vegetables as we think of today, these victory gardens, but she gardened. Mm-hmm. And then when I married at 17, and it just evolved. It evolved from geraniums along the back fence, flowers, into a tomato plant here and there, and a squash that would trail everywhere. And then, oh my gosh, in my first home, this beautiful hill of strawberries, just magnificent, huge strawberries. It had me captivated by them. And then a vegetable garden, and then lots and lots of flowers. And over the years, small farms, lots of manure, and gardens, always gardens, somewhere gardens.
Beautiful gardens. Now, I'm just going to ask really quick. So now, where did you grow up again? Did you grow up in Oregon? Or we're in Montana, but where was your mom's garden?
Well, I was born in Montana, and my great-grandmother's home in Southern California, where I was raised. So basically, the gardens began in Southern California. Then when I was in my early 30s, we moved to Oregon, to Myrtle Creek, Oregon, and we had a small farm there where we raised just about every animal and gardened.
Oh.
It just seemed like a natural complement, animals and gardens, and producing your own food and milking cows, and so it all worked together. And then from Montana, moved on to a sailboat for 4 or 5 years, and then from the sailboat to Montana, and it's totally different from California to Oregon to Montana. Totally different gardening.
So you have tons to share with us. Okay, so our next question is, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you? Because, you know, there's always kind of a little different, everybody kind of has a different opinion.
Well, I thought about that question because it was on your list of questions. And I guess earth-friendly gardening means leaving the land better than you found it.
Oh,
and
really?
I read that somewhere when, and I don't even know where I read it, but it said one of the best things you could do for our Earth is to leave an acre of ground better than you found it. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, basically what that is improving the soil and not messing it up. So organic gardening, and I never even thought I was an organic gardener in the beginning, because I didn't pesticides and herbicides. You just put the manure on the ground and plant, and it comes up. And you go out in the morning, and you pick the little bugs off the plants and the caterpillars, and you don't spray things. And that's part of the joy of waking up in the morning is going out with your tea and coffee and picking off the little worms.
Absolutely. Isn't that the best?
It is. It is. It's fun.
Okay, so next question. So who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
Well, I don't know that I was ever inspired. It was just a natural progression of back when I was younger. I don't know that there were as many gardeners that I knew of. And basically, you dig a hole, you put a plant in it, and it either grows or it dies, and you learn from that. And I never thought of myself as an organic gardener until I became more aware of what organic gardening meant. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, I'm an organic gardener.
I know, isn't that funny? Like, but I've been surprised. Like, I've asked a few people I know that have gardens and just naturally assume that they were organic, and they're like, "Oh, I can't be on your show because I put Miracle-Gro on my food," and I'm like, "You do?" And I'm just like, "But I guess they sell aisles of it in the store, so there are people that are buying it." It just does seem right.
It says that it's safe for fruits and vegetables, and yet I don't really consider that organic. And since I've always had animals, which is a beautiful complement to the soil. I've just always, a deer's just walking by. I just have always used what my animals have gifted me with, and then you put it in the soil and things grow.
Excellent.
If you have water and sunshine and manure, you really don't need much more.
Exactly. Okay, so then how did you learn how to do all this? How to use those gifts from the animals and all the other, how to garden that way?
Well, I've had a lot of failures, and I've had some successes. And over the years, you just learn what works and what doesn't work in your area. There are many things that grow well in one area that don't grow well in another area. So if you try something that doesn't grow well, then you have to look at it and say, well, is this something for my area? Am I trying too hard? And should I just grow something that loves it here?
And, that's kind of a theme I'm starting to already see with the interviews that I've done, is that people talk a lot about trial and error, and some things are successful. And I think that's the best thing people could say, because it's going to inspire people to try and not give up if things don't work the first time. And everybody seems to have way more successes than they're having failures. So that's good. I just think that's a great part of the show. So easily.
You put seeds in the ground, and most of the time, you're going to get something. You may not get as much as a neighbor, or you may not get as much as the catalog shows you in a photograph, but you're going to get something. And then you just keep going. You just keep going with it.
Okay, now that's where I've got to laugh. And this is probably the funny part of me doing this show, because I'll bet you that would not necessarily work for me.
Why?
Because, Mike's the gardener in the house. Because I can barely keep a geranium and a basil plant alive. Although I did grow a bunch of sunflowers once. And I have learned. I mean, we've been married, 22 years now? So I have learned a ton. But if he wasn't there to watch me, I would probably not even remember to water it every day.
It's not quite that
easy.
Look at your gifts. You're a fantastic artist.
Aww.
You're a journalist. You do so many things well. That if all of us liked orange, if all of us could grow tomatoes, if all of us did the exact same thing, it would be a very, very boring world.
True.
And you and Mike complement each other.
Yes.
And that is so wonderful. That complement is perfection.
So all right, so let's share some tips on what people can do that are kind of like me, that don't know how to grow things and are worried about their failures, from some of you experts who compliment us. So tell us about something that grew well this year.
Let's see, what grew well this year? Oh my goodness, my strawberries again.
Strawberries,
magnificent. I just put them in the ground. Well, actually, last year, I took my garden and I totally redid the whole thing. I put little picket fence in it and made a perfect, proper herb garden in the front, and I've never really gardened in raised beds before, so I have raised beds in the back half of my garden, and it was a whole new experience for me rather than just gardening in rows in the soil, mm-hmm. which is what I've done for a lot of years rather than having proper raised beds. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. My strawberries were magnificent. Lots and lots of chickweed, which is a good thing because I'm going to make pesto with it this year. My calendula was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. The beans were great. My tomatoes, I have a really hard time with tomatoes here. We're so cold, and my garden is a little bit downslope from the house, so all the cold air goes down. I grow better tomatoes up on my deck than I do in my garden, so that's a challenge. I'm looking out at my garden right now trying to figure out what grew best. Peas were wonderful. I was disappointed with my broccoli and my cauliflower in my raised beds because I've never grown the brassicas in the raised beds, and I've always found that if I can hill them up, plant them in the ground, and then as they grow, hill the dirt up around the stems, I get really thick stems and huge, huge blooms.
And your broccoli?
Broccoli,
is that what you said?
Yes.
I'm going to have to try that.
A foot and a half across, I mean, huge. You wouldn't believe it. But I didn't in my raised beds because I had a hard time trying to mound the dirt up around the stems. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed in that aspect of my raised bed.
Okay.
But my my goodness, the kale was huge. It was taller than I was.
No way.
Well, I'm short.
But still, that's still pretty tall kale. And
even in
a raised bed, that's still. Yeah, those raised beds. You know what? I was just telling Mike the other day, we need to go build my mom a raised bed so she can see what that's like. Because I don't think she's ever gardened in raised beds. And the more people I talk to on this show, the more people say that's a big part of their success. And so,
is the raised
for sure.
Bed?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to have more experience and do more of it. Last summer was basically my first experience with a raised bed. So I'm learning. The beds or the rows in the ground have always been what's been done. So this is fun.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So how about something that you find is easy to grow and is generally successful every time? Anything around here that you found that's always works for you every year?
Oh, you can't kill lettuce.
Really? Okay.
Oh, lettuce. I have a bathtub. I have an old closet tub up against the side of the log cabin in just a little tiny fenced yard. And every year, it's actually about time for me now to sow some seeds. And I'll put
outside?
Lettuce finish.
Outside?
Outside, because it's right up against the house and it's so warm. And just this last week when we had that warming weather, I cleared off all the stuff from last fall, and then I just sow seeds, and I'll take some of my compost and put on top of the seeds, and then first thing in the spring, that lettuce comes up. I have a friend, and she always sows her kale and spinach and lettuce seeds, anything that's a cold weather crop in the fall. And then the first warmth in the spring, they start sprouting. That's what I did with my kale. I guess it would be last fall before last.
True. And, you know, I saw tulip sprouts and hollyhocks in Eureka in town just the day before yesterday. My friend was clearing out some of the, you know, dead stuff out of her beds. And sure enough, there were tulips sprouting already. So.
Oh, it's...
I guess. I don't know. It's hard to believe it's February, Montana this year, but
Oh, I know. The fellow at the post office just told me that his lady friend at Murphy Lake here, which is a fairly close lake, has daylilies about 6 inches up right now, and this is February.
Wow, that is crazy. Okay, how about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow?
Oh, well, where? Because what I would find challenging here might be totally successful someplace else.
Oh, challenging in our climate here in Montana, something that you would steer gardeners away from in Montana.
You know, and it depends on where in Montana. I have a difficult time growing corn. There's a corn variety that comes out of Alaska. That's a very short season corn. Mm. I can grow that, but I can't grow those great big ears. Watermelon and cantaloupe, I can't grow those. I just don't have the length of season. Now, maybe if I were more clever, or I had hothouses, or I babied them more, perhaps then I could grow the cantaloupes and watermelons. But, that's so iffy for me. But I find any of the cooler weather crops, the beets, the carrots, any of that grow wonderfully well for me. So I just shy away from that, and I buy that sort of thing from people that can grow it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to find out what that corn is you get out of Alaska, though, because that's, I talked to somebody else this morning, and that was the exact same answer they gave me. And we've had a tough time, and Mike had such a nice corn crop this year, but we had that early frost, so.
Oh, I think I saw online in one of your beds, the corn stalk.
Right, yeah, I know. Oh, he had so much corn, it was so nice, but. Okay, so how about any secrets for preserving food or making it last longer?
Oh, preserving food. Well, this year, I turned my chicken coop into my gathering room. And so I was able to take all of my garlic and onions and dry them in a dry place, which was wonderful for me because I've never really had a place that I could dry. You lay them out on the ground and it rains or it's too damp or it's something. But that was fantastic. And I'm still using my onions and garlic, and that's new for me. I've tried.
So tell me a little bit more about that. Like, how did you dry them? Like on newspaper, or on a bench, on a screen? Like,
I just threw them on the wood floor.
Oh, okay. Cool.
It's so simple. It was just a wood floor, and I was busy, and I just pulled the garlic, and I pulled the onions, and I just put them on the wood floor in my old chicken coop, and it's the best it's ever been.
Nice. I like that. How about something for eating? This is definitely my other biggest challenge, is eating and harvesting the vegetables or the fruit before it rots, like eating it on time or getting it. It's always, I mean, and even for me, Mike laughs because like one day I go and pick the lettuce and the next day I clean it and then the third day I might finally eat it. But doing all three of those in one day rarely happens. So anything that can help eating or harvest the vegetables or fruit or anything on time before it goes,
That takes doing it. And when I was in Oregon, I was able to go out every morning. And every morning I would go out and I would pick enough that was ripe to make one canner full, just one. I didn't try to save enough up to do like a whole day of canning because my schedule didn't allow it. I think that was my most successful time gathering, was just going out in the morning, gathering, canning.
Okay.
And that,
I like that.
Well, for me, here I don't have the time in the morning to do what I did in Oregon, and so here I've turned it into a nighttime romp, if you want to call it that, a before romp. After my day's done, I go out and I gather what I want for dinner, and I bring it in. And I'll spend an hour out in the garden just talking to the plants, gathering, and then that's what I'll have for dinner. I don't have as big a vegetable garden here as I did in Oregon, and it's possible to do that.
Cool. All right. How about any special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods?
Unusual foods and techniques.
Well, I was thinking you were going to tell us about your chickweed pesto, maybe.
Oh, I just read about that. This year, I'd like to give an herb walk every month in the summer. And one of the things I read in one of the books, it was Backyard Medicine, I believe, and it was a book written in England, and they made chickweed pesto. I've not done it. I've made chickweed out of, or pesto out of different herbs, but not chickweed, and chickweed grows so well in my garden, and I love it. I love it for salads, and I use it in my salves, and I've used it for medicine, for culinary, for cosmetic uses, but I've never made pesto, and so I am so excited about this year you doing a chickweed pesto.
I don't even think I know what chickweed is. I'm going to have to look that up.
It's a little creeping plant. It has little tiny white flowers on it, and it's wonderful for itches. It's supposed to help with weight loss, and I just love the herb. You can use it in poultices. I put it in salads. It's just a lovely little herb that's a very selfish herb.
What's that mean?
Selfish, it means it wants to take over everything.
Now, you said Valerian
is my most selfish, medicinal.
Mine is oregano. Oregano just spreads like crazy. I have so much oregano, I don't know. It drives Mike nuts. It just overtakes my garden.
Oh, but it's such a wonderful herb. I'd love to start making herbal pillows, and I've started making some herbal butters, just putting the herb into butter or coconut oil or olive oil and preserving it that way for the winter.
Oh.
And that's fun. You just stuff the herb into a jar, cover it with oil, put a cheesecloth or a muslin over the top, put it in a sunny window, and just let it sit.
Really?
And it's great. You can use it on salads. You can cook with it all winter. And it's an easy preservation. Of course, you can dry it, and that's what I do in my old chicken coop, is I dry a lot of herbs out there.
Now, did you say you've made pesto with other herbs besides, because I've only heard of making pesto with basil. What other herbs have you made pesto with? Because we all love pesto, right? Huh?
Well, pesto, basically, is just an herb oil, and then you can put any kind of nut in with it, and you can add cheese if you want. Of course, our common pesto is basil.
Right.
But there's so many other herbs that you can use. Parsley, cilantro. I'm dying to try the chickweed.
Oh, cilantro pesto. That sounds so good. I think cilantro is my favorite herb. I love
it. So good here. It grows well. You've probably grown it. I love cilantro. So you just throw it in the blender with olive oil, and you can add anything you want. It doesn't have to be pine nuts. Pine nuts are pretty expensive. Walnuts are delicious.
I've used walnuts before, but they're still expensive. Not like pine nuts, but still. But that sounds so good. Oh, you're making me hungry. All right, how about a favorite recipe you like to cook?
Oh, a favorite recipe. What do I like to cook? For breakfast, I really enjoy going out and gathering any of the leafy greens, spinach, kale, some of the herbs in my garden, and then I like to saute them, and I'll make an omelet. I'll just put them in the middle of an omelet. For supper, I love gathering flowers. That's another thing that is one of the most relaxing things at the end of the day for me, is to go out and gather flowers and make a salad. And my neighbor, Dave, he has a lady friend that comes over from Japan, and she makes the most delicious roll-up things, like these rice roll-up things. And I gathered last summer hollyhocks and nasturtiums and what else, daylilies, and any flower I could gather in the garden, and she used those in these most delicious egg roll things.
Really? I didn't know you could even eat hollyhocks.
Oh, they're delicious. And they're beautiful, too. I just go out and gather the blossom, and then I'll come in and take a pair of scissors and just cut them up in the salad bowl.
Wow. I've put nasturtiums in my salads. And what was the other one that you said? Lilies? I didn't know you could eat those either.
Yes. Daylilies. The tubers, mm-hmm. the roots. You never have to divide a daylily plant. You can dig it up, eat the roots. It's kind of like a cross between a Jerusalem artichoke and a potato, kind of, sort of. And you can take the blossoms and stuff it with cream cheese, cut them up in your salads, make those wonderful egg roll things, which I just learned how to do last summer. And, oh, yes, daylilies, magnificent.
Wow, I had no idea. Okay, how about your favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and you could only take one tool with you, what tool could you never not live without?
Bar none, my garden fork. I gardened for years with my little tiny baby shovel. And then a friend came over with a garden fork. I mean, hello, after all these years, I had no clue. And she lifted a plant with this garden mm-hmm. fork. It was just amazing. It was like magic to me.
Nice. That's probably my favorite, too.
Is it a garden fork? And this is like all these years, how did I not know?
How about a favorite internet resource? Anything? Do you ever use the internet for anything?
Oh, I do. An internet resource.
We're all waiting for Theodora's Gardens website.
And that is coming soon, hopefully. And in it, usually, because I'm not very good with the internet, if I just Google in what I want. Like if there's an herb that I want to know more about and I don't have it in my library, I'll just Google in the herb, and then all these things come up.
That works. It's amazing. I love Google. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine?
I guess it's The Organic Gardener. I like that magazine. And then there's one about herbs that I find in the supermarket every once in a while. I have quite an extensive library, and I never tire of going back over things. Cookbooks, there has to be pictures. If I can't see a picture, then I tire of the book. That's, I think, why I liked your website so much, is the pictures. Put more on.
Okay. I was laughing because I thought, gosh, I haven't hardly put any pictures up. I haven't had time to work on the website yet at all, so... Because I have thousands of pictures, you know, and I'm just thinking, I just haven't had time to work on it. They'll get up there. So cool. Pictures. You've encouraged me. Oh. Yeah, I'm a picture person too, for sure.
Yes, the chocolate cake recipe without the picture just doesn't do it.
I like that. Okay, so, all right, here's your... opportunity to tell us about your business. Tell us about the things that you make, the wonderful salves, the creams, where you're headed, your spa that's coming that I know everyone's going to want to go to. Tell us about Theodora's Garden.
Okay. Well, back in the early 90s, I got very ill, and I had to make a decision as to what I was going to do about life. And so I became more natural, I guess you could call it. And I went on... A quest to heal myself. And during that quest, my studies into herbalism developed, and we moved to Montana, and I started Theodora's Garden. Actually, back in the early 90s, I started making creams and salves when I was into herbal studies, and people would say, well, can you make this? And with all the confidence, if someone knew absolutely nothing, I would say, of course, I'll make that. And a lot of stuff was dumped out, but now I make herbal products, many of them made from the plants that I grow here or the plants that I gather. And so that's Theodora's Garden, and I have many plants that I dig for people. Any plant that makes a baby in my herbal walkways, they're free to dig up.
Really?
So... and they gather plants out of my walkways and take them home. And this last summer, I've made a vacation rental in a building that's on this small farm. And I'm moving my business from a basement to what I'm going to call the apothecary, mm-hmm. and have more room to experiment and enjoy the people that come out here to visit my garden. It's kind of a joke. My brother, it's Theodora's garden or Teddy's weed patch, depending upon my energy level.
Well, your weeds are beautiful anyway, I'm sure. Some of us wouldn't even know the difference. Well, how about if somebody was interested in starting a business like that, like learning how to, make salves or creams, do you have any advice for them? Like if you could only put one herb in your garden, like somebody starting really small, is there an herb you would tell them to start with or somewhere to go to learn?
Oh, well, the School of Natural Healing has a wonderful school, and I'm sure that there's many more out there that I don't even know of in today's world. My first salve that I made was a three-herb salve, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I don't understand why I even thought about these three, but it was calendula, plantain, and marshmallow, and that was the very first salve that I made. And so anybody can make a salve out of anything. It's what you want to do with it. So depending upon where you live and what is prolific and what you want to do with that salve, it can be medicinal. It can try to make something better, either or cosmetic, which is, of course, going to get rid of all of our wrinkles, right? And, oh, I do have a face cream that has a 50-year money-back guarantee. If you use it faithfully for the next 50 years and you have one wrinkle, you get all of your money back. Save your receipts.
I like that. Okay.
So, basically, salves are easy to make. You just take the herb, preferably dry it, and put it into oil, add some beeswax, and you've got a salve.
Really?
And that's a wonderful way of preserving your bounty from the garden. And to try to tell someone what herb would be best for their salve in their area, I'm not so sure. But calendula is probably one of my favorites, and I think it grows just about everywhere.
I think those were perfect answers. I think you've given us tons of great information today and inspired people, and I think they're going to like this interview, and we need to get some kind of link in the show notes so they can find your stuff and look at your... be able to purchase some of your products, because I can testify that they are wonderful and so helpful and healing and just great. So just to finish off here, do you have an inspirational tip or a quote or anything to motivate our listeners to go ahead and reach into that dirt or start their own garden?
Well, I guess the motivation is just bend down, pick up some dirt in your hand, see what it feels like, and plant something. Just do it. That's the first step. Is don't even think about a huge 100-by-100-foot garden. If all it is just a pot on your balcony.
Okay.
Put something in it. Start. Just start. If you haven't started, the first step is just to start. And if you like it, if it appeals to you, if it makes you feel happy, if you get pleasure from putting something into the soil, then you're off and running.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Theodora, for being my guest today on the Organic Gardener podcast. It's just been a pleasure to have you. You've given us tons of valuable tips and lots of information. And do you just want to say goodbye?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jackie. And I just can't wait to walk over and see your beautiful garden this summer. After all, you're a neighbor. You're just right there.
Yes, and I'll be home this summer, so let's do it.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener podcast. I would like to encourage you to visit our website at mikesgreengarden.wordpress.com/organicgardenerpodcast, where you can check out the links to everything we talked about today in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.